Did you know that VA New England Healthcare provides the very best medical care for our nation's heroes? Did you or a loved one serve this great country? You might be eligible for free healthcare. Find out right now by calling 844-VA-CARES. That's 844-VA-CARES. Or visit the VA website at vacares.us. Look, if you or a loved one served this country, get the healthcare you earned and deserve.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome to the Detroit Football Network podcast midweek episode. Joined by Will Birchfield, I'm Justin Rogers, and some news this week, Will, and I would say of the unfortunate variety. I don't know if there's a better way to put that. Jameson Williams pending suspension. It is not official yet, but the way everybody's talking about it, it's just a matter of time. He's got a appeal decision to make, and that's the holdup. And I don't know if he's just trying to get through a week of practice and only miss 1 week of practice since it's a 2-game suspension. But you know, we will likely know the outcome of whether he appeals or is going to accept the suspension by the end of this week.
Yeah, unfortunate news for the Lions, but not wholly unfamiliar news for the Lions. I mean, yeah. This is obviously the second time in as many seasons that J-Mo will miss time for his own mistakes, and both were innocent mistakes. That seems very clear. We don't know exactly what the substance was that he used in this case, but given the length of the suspension, it would suggest that it's a relatively minor offense. But you are responsible for your own decisions in the NFL, and now he will have missed 6 games because he wasn't aware of the rules that he is subject to. And it's a reminder that for as much as he has grown up, and he has over the past year, and as much as he has matured, he still is a 23-year-old who's finding his way in the NFL. So the Lions will have to make do without him, and they should be just fine. I mean, I think that the J-Mo effect has been real in that he has bended defenses in a way that the Lions haven't been able to in the past. But there are so many playmakers that they should survive his 2-game absence just fine.
Yeah, even look at the last game, right? He had one reception, negative yardage on that, but the impact was still there in the way that the defense was manipulated. And I think you don't need to look any further than Amon-Ra's 35-yard touchdown. You know, well, how does that play work? It works because Goff takes a snap and he stares down Jameson Williams from the snap. He's running a little out and up, and it draws the safety, the middle field safety, over to give added attention because he requires added attention.
Yeah.
And it just allowed St. Brown to fire down the seam for what amounted to a relatively easy score. And so, you know, he is half, I think, of kind of what they do. And it's this stretch you deep or pound the rock, depending on how you want to defend it. He gives them that unique versatility, and they do not have a deep threat like him. They have guys that can catch deep passes. We saw it with Tim Patrick. We've seen it in the past with Khalif Raymond, but nobody quite as threatening, you know, down in and down out as Williams. So it's going to be a little bit of a struggle, maybe not a little bit of a struggle this week with this opponent, but you know, certainly will be felt more in a couple weeks when Green Bay is on the docket.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I assume we'll see some of Allen Robinson, Detroit's own Allen Robinson, in Jameel's absence. I know you had a chance to catch up with him today in the locker room. We'll certainly see some more Khalif Raymond. We saw a lot of Khalif Raymond against the Vikings, and he played really well. He put Gilmore on his ass on that one release on that touchdown, which we should get later, because that release deserves further mention. But just back to JMO for a sec, we did talk to Dan Campbell today, and he gave a very strong and very firm vote of confidence to Jameson Williams. And he was asked essentially, you know, does he need to do anything to rebuild trust with you and the coaching staff and the organization? And Dan Campbell used this really colorful and descriptive analogy of the team dangling a rope for Jameson Williams at the beginning of last season for him to climb up. And he said he did. He said, you know, we're not going to wait on anyone, but he climbed that rope and he met us and he joined us. And look, he may have lost a grip again, and now he's going to have to reclimb that rope, but we have full faith that he will. And he must have said three or four times adamantly, I trust him. I trust this kid. He said, based on our past conversations, I know that when he says something, he will live up to his word. I believe him. And so I don't think. Yeah, I'm just reading Campbell's body language and words today. I don't think their belief or confidence in JMO has been shaken by the suspension. I do think there is some frustration because he had to stand up there for an extra probably 7 or 8 minutes today and answer questions about his star receiver second suspension in as many seasons. And it imposes a little bit of a lull on this offense that is running so efficiently right now. So there's frustration, but more than that, there's belief.
You hear this phrase with development on the field. You know, mistakes are okay. Just don't make the same mistake twice. You know, that's kind of the sign of growth of a young player. And I think it's largely true off the field as well. I mean, obviously there are some mistakes that are much harder to overcome, but you said it, I think, accurately at the start here at the top. They're non-malicious mistakes. They're youthful transgressions, and not making excuses for the guy. You know, it is his responsibility as a professional to know the rules, to know what he can and can't do. We saw this last year with the gambling, and I don't know if people like realize just how much is put on these young players' plates when they get here, the symposiums, the meetings they have to go through. You know, some process it really well. It's like a class on life. You know, you're taking life 101 as a rookie here. You know, and for whatever reason, all the details and all the information is not sticking with Jameson. He hasn't been as careful with the gambling last year, you know, making a bet in the facility. And I guess you're just thankful that he didn't bet on the Lions or bet on the NFL. So, I mean, something, you know, probably stuck there. You know, he claimed he didn't know last year, and it's an excuse. It's just not an okay excuse. And I think ultimately we'll find out that this was a very similar situation. Mm-hmm. We do not know what he took that caused the test to pop positive. We know the classifications. There's diuretics, there's masking agents, and there's stimulants. And, you know, I don't know what it was, but it could be as something as simple as cold medication, right? It could be Sudafed. And what these players have at their disposal is the ability to ask, you know, 24/7 to send a screenshot if you're sick and you got to grab some cold medication. You have a list available to you through the NFLPA. And, you know, if it was something as innocent as that, it's still your responsibility to know what you're putting in your body. Mm-hmm. And so it's just an accountability thing. And I will say that about Jameson, you know, for the mistakes, he does take accountability for him. He's not making the excuses. And even though there's some similarity to gambling suspension here and not knowing the rules potentially, it's got to be like the on-field development. You can't make it again. And I think Campbell's comments reflected their trust in him to learn and grow and keep the maturation process going, which has admittedly been on a pretty sharp rise in the last 12 months.
Yeah, no, I fully agree. I think it's discouraging from just an observational standpoint. It was so fun to watch Jameson over the first six games of this season, because as you said, it felt like he didn't even need to touch the ball more than once or twice in a game to entirely affect it, like to leave a legitimate imprint on it. Now, it's also going to be fun to watch Ben Johnson react to this. I mean, there's no one better at putting together a game plan on a week in, week out basis based on what he has than Ben Johnson. And he gets a chance to do it this week against what is quietly the number one defense in the NFL based on yards allowed in the Titans. And I think it makes for some interesting subplot entering Sunday's game.
A little bit different than the Aiden Hutchinson loss, but you know, I think it's going to be a collective that has to replace what he brings to the table. And you know, I really thought maybe Raymond was going to be the biggest piece of that, and it seemed like Campbell indicated that, you know, it's probably going to be Allen Robinson, and you know, maybe it's a 50-50 thing. Maybe Tim Patrick picks up a little bit more. Maybe, I mean, God knows Sam LaPorta could have, you know, handle a few more targets. This, you did mention that Raymond release, and I stumbled upon it on my film review yesterday. I had not seen it, threw it out on Twitter, and I had to mute the comments because it has 10,000 likes and over a 500,000 views. He
cooked him. He did him nasty.
And that is the 2019 defensive player of the year. That is a 5-time Pro Bowler. And I realize he's long in the tooth, but, look, Gilmore was playing well for an undefeated team, and, anybody could have one bad play, one bad moment. But, I think it was reflective of the entirety of Raymond's performance. He was targeted 4 times. All 4 routes were superb. He had 3 receptions. That one was a touchdown. And then the deep ball that he had was another just really great route. And it was maybe Jared Goff's only critical error in that game, as he threw him wide. And, you know, that leads us into our next topic. Goff is on the heater of heaters. And, I mean, legitimately the best quarter season efficiency-wise for a quarterback in NFL history. No quarterback over 4 games has ever completed over 80% of their passes. I think he's at 83.5. None over a passer rating of over 140. He's at 144 over these 4 games. And it's just the right mix of everything. He's hitting his deep shots largely when he takes them. Sans the Raymond one I just mentioned. He's taking the checkdowns at the right time. He's not turning the ball over. It is just a masterclass of efficiency. Yep. And just like last year, after 6 games, we are left to have the conversation once again. Jared Goff, legitimate MVP contender.
Yes, 100%. By the way, it was a tough day for Gilmore, because not only did he get cooked by Raymond, but he also got planted into the turf by Gibbs on his touchdown, and then was on the turf watching Jahmyr Gibbs flex over him. So probably a game film that Gilmore just throws in the garbage. Yes, Jared Goff is, to me, one of the 3 leading candidates for MVP at the third way through mark of the season, along with Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson. And I don't really want to hear it about Mahomes, who has like the most
pedestrian
number in his career. But the way that Jared Goff operates this offense is second to none. And the throws speak for themselves, as do the numbers, but it was especially evident in that Vikings game just how valuable he is to this team because of his ability to read defenses, to make the right checks, to get into the right plays, to make the right adjustments. He does so many things before the ball is even snapped that dictates where the ball goes once that play is run, that they wouldn't be anywhere near as dynamic without him. And I mean, there's so many different plays in that game that illustrate that. There was a really crucial, I believe, third down, maybe second down throw to Raymond in the second half where Jared came up and made an adjustment and then threw like a back foot pass to the sideline to find Raymond. And you know, this season did not begin well for Jared Goff. Through 2 games, he was, as he said himself, I remember having this conversation with him after the Seattle game, trying to do too much and making throws that weren't really within his repertoire. And you know, he said he got away with a few that weren't even picked, and he probably should have been picked five or six times in the first two games. He goes into that Arizona game, and he just plays a much calmer and, Dan Campbell said, more conservative game that week, kind of found his rhythm by just taking what was given and hasn't lost it since. I know that second half wasn't pretty in Arizona, but it was that game that got him back to playing Jared Goff-style football. And I don't mean to say that he's playing it safe. I, you know, he still believes in his arm. He's still making bold throws, but he isn't forcing throws that aren't there. I think that's what he was doing early on. I thought his best throw last week was probably his boldest throw, and that was on the game-winning drive with about a minute left near midfield, first and 10. You know, a conservative or a safe offense probably continues to run the ball when you can run it at 4 to 5 yards a clip, bleed more clock, and eventually kick the field goal. Instead, Jared Goff takes like a 9-yard drop and fires an absolute bullet to St. Brown with two defenders converging on the ball. And it was exquisitely timed, because if the ball arrives a half second earlier, it's probably over St. Brown's head. A half second later, it's probably picked by one of those two players coming down on that route, but it just arrived when it needed to. And you'll hear Tim Patrick, who we talked to in this episode, discuss that a little bit. He said one of the things that he was drawn to Goff for and why he signed here was because he throws receivers open, but he also doesn't throw them into trouble. And there was another throw that Goff made to St. Brown in that game. I think it was like a play action pass over the middle where he actually didn't lead St. Brown, because if he had, he saw Harrison Smith coming down, who would have lit St. Brown up. But he actually pause St. Brown's route by basically throwing it to him rather than where he was going to be. And again, it was just a perfectly executed throw. And I do know you can't play the quarterback position better than Jared Goff has for four games going.
Yeah. So a couple things on the plays you mentioned, you know, the first one, the, what you call the best throw. I called it a marriage of scheme and execution. You know, I think everything was designed right to create the window for St. Brown there with you know, two underneath routes pulling in the shallow layer of the zone, Tim Patrick running a vertical route to pull that safety a little deep. You know, that created the window. Is the right call, but you got to execute it, right? It's always a marriage of mm-hmm. execution. The other one, you know, that was a good reflection. Yeah, Goff didn't lead him, but also you saw St. Brown pumped the brakes. You know, that was a player being on the same, those are players being on the same page, seeing it the same way, having the feel for the nuances of zone defense. And I will contend that Jared Goff's best throw was his dagger to Tim Patrick.
Yeah.
And that one in particular impressed me because Taylor Decker was beat on the play mm-hmm. and Jonathan Grenard took a pretty heavy swipe at the ball. And we know Goff doesn't always have the best ball security in the pocket. It's a long time area concern, you know, whatever you want to tie it to, his hand size or whatever. And he had good security on the ball, but he didn't panic in a moment where it was really could have been easy to panic. He recognized the pocket he had in front of him. He stayed calm. I think the broadcast showed his face, this look of determination, if you will, stepped forward and nailed Patrick downfield, like in stride. And, you know, that to me is reflective of just, you know, the growth more than so many other things, is just his calmness in the pocket in those situations. Yeah. It's, you know, it's MVP-esque. And, you know, if I was voting today, I probably wouldn't vote for Goff just based on some of the counting numbers. It's really hard to bet against Lamar Jackson right now.
He's a two-time MVP for a reason.
I know. He's the only quarterback to have a better passer rating than Goff, clearly a better QBR because that factors in rushing. And he's got, oh, what is it? Oh, good, 455 yards rushing. So he's averaging 65 yards rushing a game. Like, yeah, he's going to threaten 1,000 yards rushing, and he's playing maybe the best quarterback of his life. Two other guys that are going to be in that mix, I think, at the end of the season, Joe Burrow, assuming the Bengals continue to climb out of their hole, 14 touchdowns, two picks, 110 passer rating. I mean, he's just playing phenomenal football as well. Maybe the most accurate passer in football the last few years. And I don't know how we could ignore Derrick Henry either. He's got more than 200 yards, more than the next guy rushing. He's been player of the week twice in the last 4 weeks. I mean, you knew when he got there, you knew he was going to be the perfect
fit.
Yeah,
he was always meant to be a Baltimore Raven. Oh,
man, that is maybe going to be the team to beat when we get all the way to the finish line here. Like, that is a Super Bowl foe that would give anyone, including the Lions trouble.
And you named the last time a non-quarterback won the MVP?
I believe it was 1997. Some guy named Barry?
It was, in fact...
Oh, no, it's Tomlinson.
It was even more recent than that. This is actually a former Lions running back
who
won the most recent NFL MVP.
I didn't know Arto Spinner won an MVP.
It was a great year for Theo Riddick.
Nice.
2012 is the hint. NFC North foe is the other hint. Who played for the Vikings?
Adrian Peterson. I was thinking the reverse way.
Yeah. Non-quarterback to an MVP. So it would take a Herculean season from Derrick Henry to knock off a quarterback. But if anyone can do it, it's him. A couple more things on Goff. That Vikings defense will eat you alive if you're not prepared for all of their exotic pressures and their blitzes that aren't blitzes, but then their coverages that turn into blitzes. And they have completely overwhelmed offenses for a year plus now under Brian Flores. But the three times that they have played Ben Johnson and Jared Goff, the Lions have had every answer they've needed. They've scored 30 plus on them each of their three matchups. And that Vikings defense has otherwise held teams to 18 points a game. So it's just another credit to Johnson and Goff and the offensive line working in concert to solve the most aggressive and, again, exotic defense that maybe exists in the NFL. And then it's also a tribute to this new Jared Goff, who is nothing but poised and calm under pressure. I mean, even as recently as last season, the most valid knock on his game was that he crumbled in the face of pressure. Well, not this year. I mean, not even close to it. If you go by the PFF numbers, he's
fourth
in
best.
Fact, he's been the best quarterback in completion percentage and yards per attempt on throws under pressure this season, and he ranks fifth in passer rating. And it doesn't feel like a tribute to the offensive line when you talk about making throws under pressure, but I think in some ways it is. And the throw that you highlighted is one that we can come back to, because yes, Decker was beat around the edge, but the rest of the pocket was secure and everyone else around him held up long enough. And Jared said this week, you know, playing behind these guys for 3 years now, I have such comfort in knowing how much time I have in the pocket. And so while one piece of five may have broken down, the other four held up perfectly. He stepped up where he needed to and delivered that ball to Tim Patrick. And, as much as a great offensive line keeps you clean, it also affords you assurance to know where you need to be and how long you have with the ball in the pocket. And I think they've imbued Goff with that self-confidence to sit in the pocket as long as he feels like he needs to. One more PFF stat for you. When he has at least 2.5 seconds to throw this year, he is first in completion percentage, yards per attempt, and passer rating. So it really does all flow through the offensive line. But Jared Goff, man, he's doing it every which way.
So Derrick Henry, Herculean season. He's on pace for 2,120 yards and 19 touchdowns. So pretty Herculean. And I think that's what's, to me, is going to hold Goff back, because you have to have kind of absurd stats as a pocket passer, because you don't get the benefit of the rushing yards. And, you know, right now Goff's only on pace for like 27 touchdowns. And, you know, if he... hits, you know, kind of his stride with scores and, you know, pushes it more into that 35-40 ballpark while continuing to, you know, produce in every other way that he is, you know, that will thrust him into the conversation because, well, and certainly you want to, you know, see another division winner or conference winner, you know, that always give you a boost with the voters, but
he's just gotta keep running the ball. I mean, if he piles up a few more rushing first downs, he'll track down Lamar.
That does not seem accurate. We are going to pick up on some Titans talk here coming out of the break, but you know, first things first coming out of the break, you will hear from Tim Patrick, and admittedly a little bit of a truncated interview. The locker room had a NFL PA meeting that cleared them out today, and even though I don't think we realized that Tim Patrick wasn't going to that meeting, we gave him the out. So stay tuned, and you'll be back listening to that with Will and I coming out of the break.
Did you know that VA New England Healthcare provides the very best medical care for our nation's heroes? Did you or a loved one serve this great country? You might be eligible for free healthcare. Find out right now by calling 844-VA-CARES. That's 844-VA-CARES. Or visit the VA website at vacares.us. Look, if you or a loved one served this country, get the healthcare you earned and deserve.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you. And also accepts insurance. Visit MindfulTherapyGroup.com.
For the past 3 seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a 4th season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Tim, you've quickly become one of the most popular players on this roster. I don't know if it's because you're the shiny new toy. I don't know what it is, but how are you dealing with all this newfound attention?
It's the same. Me, I haven't really noticed it, but if that's what y'all say, that means I'm doing something right or wrong, and as of right now, I'm doing something right, so it's a good thing.
You've talked about this a few times. You had several options when, you know, Denver and you parted ways. You chose here. You said it fit you, or you thought it fit you. How much has maybe your vision for this fit kind of come to fruition here now, you know, month and a half, 2 months in?
It's what I thought it was going to be, honestly. I don't want to say it's what I thought it was going to be because I didn't. Honestly, all I've known is Denver for the most part. So I was assuming it would be somewhat like that, but it is definitely a little bit different, and it's different in a way that fits me and my skill set. So it's been a perfect fit so far.
You said that Jared was one of the main reasons you chose to sign here. What did you like about him from afar? What appealed about him to you, and what have you maybe learned about him since becoming a teammate?
Well, we had Johnny Moe. He was here, I think, like 2 years ago. So we watched a lot of Lions film, and you could just see he either threw his guys open or he threw his guys into safety, and it was just like, that's what you want out of your quarterback. wherever he puts the ball, you know he's putting you in a situation to succeed and not get hit or something like that. So it makes it easy to catch the ball because you're not really worried about anything else but just catching the ball. His accuracy, and just once you build his trust, you can see like he kind of just throws it to a spot and trusts you're going to be there. So it's one of those things you love. Like, and for the most part, he can't really run, so you have no choice but to throw the ball.
I think Anzalone told me that he looks like a baby giraffe when he starts running. Do you have a description for Jared Goff's running style?
He looked like Usain Bolt.
He's getting 10 carpets on Sunday now.
Hey, you don't get a lot of time during the season to kind of get out and about, but have you been able to get out in the city at all? Is there anything you've grown to appreciate, or are you just all work all the time?
All ball. I haven't seen nothing but where I live. I eat in this Mediterranean spa every day.
Every day.
What's the order? It's a galof. Is that how you pronounce it?
With sounds lamb. Good to me.
Yeah, half lamb, half chicken with the white sauce on it. Cucumbers, tomatoes, and spinach with a little bit of seasoning. Side of fries.
Oh yeah. That's Tim Patrick on the menu. Hey, I want to apologize. I keep on banging on your door for interviews. So I appreciate you continuing to answer the bell. You were telling us last week that you've got, I think, your three dogs tattooed on your leg. What kind of dogs? What are their names? And how long have you had them?
I got a Doberman. His name is Chapo, after the great El Chapo. And then we got my dog, my Frenchie. His name is Dago, because if you're from San Diego, we say Dago.
Yeah.
And then Tinkerbell, she's a Yorkie. She's my girls, and she's part of the family now.
I ain't got nothing.
If one is out of it, they're shit show, but when they're all together, we're good.
I'm curious. I was scooping on your Twitter when you got here, and you were looking for boot recommendations. Have you consulted with Malcolm Rodriguez? Because I think he knows a thing or two about boots.
Not gonna lie, I haven't been on Twitter since the start of fall camp. So
All ball.
I got some boots, though. Shout out to Boots Barn. They hooked it up.
You said that you're also trying to stay off Instagram. Hey, how hard is that, though? Because sometimes you pull the phone out, you just want to open the app, scroll a little bit. Is it tempting to
be on there? The only reason
it's
hard is when I get over studying and everything. It's like I literally have nothing else to do.
Yeah.
So it's like sometimes I scroll. But most of the time, I'm not going to lie, I stay on Facebook because it's pretty much my family that I follow, so it's not really no sport things or anything. I just watch reels.
Yeah. How else do you relax? I mean, how do you decompress?
Watch reels.
Ball ball.
I just watched, I think they call it the crossover. That's like the first show I finished in a while, so that it's pretty much all ball because there's football on damn near every day except like 2 or 3 days out of the week, and if not, I'm in a different conference now, or division now, so like I watch other teams, like the Green Bay Houston game been on repeat on NFL Network the past couple of days, so I watch them, and just football, man.
I'm gonna guess that you play basketball back in your day.
Yeah.
What's your best sport besides football?
It'd probably be basketball. They're all kind of like, it's like I would say I'm pretty good at everything. It's just I would say I'm not truly elite. Without making it sound bad, I'm just good at a lot of things, but I'm not elite at it, I guess.
What did you play? Were you a wing? Were you a center?
Yeah, I was a wing.
A wing, yeah. Can you still shoot it?
Shoot it? Nah, I'm not going to people. I'm not going to lie. I make it when I need to, but for the most part, I'm definitely just trying to dunk
on people. I'm going to steal a question from St. Brown. He was asking Branch on their podcast this week to construct his starting five for basketball among players in this locker room. And Branch went with himself, obviously.
Okay.
Tarion. Roderick Martin. Dan Skipper. He said whether or not he's good at basketball, Dan Skipper, because he has the size.
Okay.
And Hendon Hooker, who is a known hooper in the locker room. Who would be your starting five? It could be guys you play with in Denver, too.
Okay. I'll keep it here. I'll put Goff as the point. I'll give him the shooting guard. I'll be at the 3. Slasher. Lob guy.
Yes.
4. Nah, I wouldn't give him the 4.
Throw him on the bus.
Who is it going
to
be?
It was going to be Skipper. But
got to be able to stretch it at four now.
I'll say Sewell will be at the four. I think he's athletic as hell.
Yeah, he can do everything.
Yeah, he could do a little bit of everything at my five. I'll give it Grimy. Who don't want to do it? Oh, I could just go small ball. I'll put Allen Robinson, small ball.
Oh, I like that.
Put him
that.
At the five. We're all above 6 foot, yeah, so we're good. Yeah.
2 minutes. All right, you're back with Detroit Football Network podcast. That was Tim Patrick, and he must think Jared's a listener because he was buttering his quarterback's bread.
Usain Bolt, that. Huh? Forget Lamar Jackson. Jared Goff's chasing down Usain Bolt.
That's quite the range of comps from Drunken Giraffe or whatever it was.
Baby Giraffe, to be fair.
Drunken Baby Giraffe.
Do you think Jared's ever been compared to Usain Bolt in his life?
No, and he shouldn't be, but alas, that's where we're at. Look, this week, the Titans come to town, and you know, when you looked at the schedule a couple weeks ago, you said, all right, this is the one breather the Lions had, and obviously mm-hmm. the Cowboys very much ended up being a breather, but I don't think anybody was sure of that. Vikings proved to be every bit the ferocious opponent, especially on the road. And I think we recognize that the Packers and Texans coming out of this game are going to be really tough games. But this Titans team is kind of a mess. Every Wednesday I post a what's new about the opponent at 6 a.m. And by 7 a.m. it was irrelevant because DeAndre Hopkins had been traded. Later in the day they traded Ernest Jones because, I don't know, I guess after 2 months you decided that linebacker wasn't a right fit for your organization if you traded for him. And so I thought Dan had an interesting – Campbell had an interesting, I guess, kind way to describe the Titans as saying they're where we were 3 years ago. Yeah. And quite frankly, they are ahead of where you were 3 years ago because they have a win in their first six games. So,
yeah, and Titans, they have a defense.
Yeah, Titans should be Super Bowl bound in about 3 years. But, you know, you talk about trap games. I don't know how much this roster, this coaching staff is even susceptible to that concept. I mean, maybe early when they were starting to have success, but like now I just fully expect them to go in and take care of business in the same way you got used to the Patriots always taking care of business, or the way the Chiefs now always just take care of business. It's just a day in the office. And, you know, it's kind of what I expect this matchup to be.
Yeah. And the Titans' strength is probably that defensive front, and the Lions have the best answer for that in their own offensive line. I mean, not to take anything away from Justin Simmons, who, as Campbell's called today, a monster, and he is. And I think he's been made even better by playing next to Devondre Sweat, who was probably a first round talent before that DUI before the draft. And he slides into the second and the Titans pick him there. And he's
366 pounds, Will.
It's a lot of human stuff in the middle of that defensive line. He's been probably the best rookie defensive tackle in the NFL this season. So those two are a problem, but it's one the Lions can solve rather consistently. I don't want to say easily, but they can depend on their interior offensive linemen. Zeitler did practice today, which points to
him
making a return on Sunday. And when you combat Simmons and Sweat and others with Ragnow, Zeitler, and Glasgow, you just feel really good about the Lions performing up to their standard on Sunday.
Yeah, they faced a really stiff challenge in being able to run the ball last week against Minnesota. I believe Minnesota coming into that game was averaging 3.6 yards per carry allowed. And you just wondered, particularly when they made Parker Hesse inactive, is if they were not conceding that they couldn't run, but prepared to lean a little bit more on Goff in the passing game. And it's not really how it worked out. It was kind of interesting at times in that game. It just felt like it was run pass, run pass, run pass, run pass. Like it was this really rhythmic offensive game plan, but they ran the ball really well beyond, you know, Gibbs's career long touchdown. It just felt like all day they were able to you know, get what they needed on the ground. And so you look at the Titans, they're a top five run defense in terms of yards per carry, but I think you just trust this offense now, this offensive line to set the tone. It doesn't matter the opponent. You feel like they're going to get it done, and then good luck stopping Jared Goff. I mean, we talked about him. He's on fire, and I know Jameson probably won't be out there, and I just have a hard time believing it'll matter.
Yeah, we do get another Quandre Diggs return.
Yes,
that's always exciting, and he's probably good to lay the lumber on someone at some point in this game. He'll come down and either hammer someone on the run, or he'll light up a receiver coming across the middle. That guy can still do it. But you know, the Titans assembled this year what felt like was going to be a pretty good team, and they had Adams and Diggs as a safety duo. Now it's just Diggs after Adams requested the trade. They had Ridley and Hopkins as a receiver duo. Now it's just Ridley, and I don't even think he practiced today. They had what looked like a pretty good linebacker duo. Now it's minus Jones. So it's a team that feels like it's really spiraling. I will say this: the only reason that they're 1-5 is that their turnover differential is among the worst in the NFL. I think they're -9, which is second worst, and they've just been giving the ball away at a ridiculous rate. And that can often make decent teams look poor. It can make decent teams look great. And the reason that the number one ranked defense belongs to a 1-5 team is because they've just given the ball away too much, and they haven't taken it away enough. And those kinds of trends don't necessarily hold up game to game. Like, you can't rely on taking the ball away from them three times and not putting it on the ground yourself. And so all it would take in this game is for that trend to flip for three quarters, for one quarter, for the Lions to find themselves in a dogfight, you know, third quarter, early fourth. I don't foresee that happening, but it does help explain why this team with a great defense finds itself 1-5, six games in.
Yeah, they are second in turnover differential, second worst in turnover difference. Yeah, only the Raiders are worse. They're at -9. One of the players you did not mention that they acquired was one that Lions fans really wanted their team to go out and trade for, and that's L'Jarius Sneed.
Yeah.
You know, the way I put it today is, like, they had a very exciting offseason. I mean, if you were a fan of that team and you're watching their GM cook, as the kids say, you're feeling pretty damn good about the caliber of players they're bringing in for a first year coach. I'm sure that just the excitement was so high. But you know, this is just proof that it's not just about acquiring names.
Yeah,
it's about chemistry. And you know, that's you know, going back to Campbell's comment, like, they went through it here to find the right pieces, but they did not do what the Titans did. I mean, they did not go out and sign a bunch of big names. They signed a bunch of formerly injured bargain basement guys and built through the draft. And that's you know, that's the way you win in this league.
I was surprised to see that Tony Pollard. I was just doing, honestly, some research on Gibbs and Montgomery.
Recon.
And came across the fact that Tony Pollard, who in my mind has always existed as more of a home run hitter and more of an elusive back, ranks towards the top of the NFL, I think third or fourth in yards after contact this season. Now, that might just be a function of a poor offensive line.
Yeah, probably.
Being forced to either shed tackles behind the line or at the line. But for a run defense that has been solid, but probably not as great as it would like to be over the past two games, this is an opportunity to swallow a running back who this season hasn't been among the easiest to take down. And, you know, I was pretty shocked when, after the failed punt against the Vikings, two plays later, Aaron Jones was 34 yards to the end zone. And while they did bottle him up a few times, more than a few, I think he had a number of runs that were for 2 yards or less, he also hit five or six explosives. And this Lions defense has really hung its hat now for 2 years on smothering the run. And I feel like Sunday is a good chance and good opportunity for them to get back to that.
You know, I don't know if we talked about it last week or post game, or I've written it. Who knows? All these things blend together. But I think it's a really underrated aspect of the loss of Davenport and Hutchinson. Mm-hmm. You know, you're talking about two large human beings on the edge, but also very athletic and very long. And just the holes, the lanes in the run game were much smaller in that C gap area between the defensive tackle and defensive end. And, you know, there was two plays with Jones back to back, and I think it was early second half, where he ran the exact same spot both times. He ran right between DJ Reader and Isaac Ukwu, right at Malcolm Rodriguez, 10 yards, 9 yards. And, you know, those are just, you don't run up the middle against this team. It's very, very difficult to do. Reader is very good at what his job is in terms of taking on blocks. McNeil's a very good run defender, I think. Levi has put a concentrated effort into getting better, and it shows. But the edge impact is there in terms of backside pursuit, in terms of keeping those lanes tight. You know, it's a loss, or an element of the loss of those two players that just isn't talked about enough. And, you know, protecting the edges where they were kind of struggling more than any other area anyway, because teams can't run up the middle or don't want to try to run up the middle. Like, that's now magnified by two or three times. And so, you know, it's an all 11 thing, stopping the run, but it feels like even more so that a cornerback like Terrion Arnold can't be out of position like he was on that Aaron Jones run, or you're just going to get destroyed. They're putting more on their linebackers now. And, you know, hopefully as they search here for a solution, I guess, or a part of the solution on the edge, minus Hutchinson and Davenport, like, run defense is part of it. It is, you know, it's not just about pressures.
Yeah, I totally agree. And one player who did show up against the run, and whose length showed up against the run against the Vikings, was Jack Campbell. And he just seems to get better and better. I think he's seen it better than he ever has in the NFL. I mean, I think it seemed like he's been around for a number of years. He's still only or barely 20 games into his career. But the length that they did lose in Hutch and Davenport, they still possess in a player like Jack Campbell, and he had a few stuffs of Aaron Jones when he tried to attack a similar gap, but Campbell sniffed it out, came downhill, and he has such long arms that, like, his tackling radius is multiple yards long, and I thought he was really effective against the run. And that's a player who's coming into his own. We've seen AG really weaponize those linebackers as pass rushers, as blitzers in the wake of the Hutch injury, and Campbell still has a ways to go in that element of his game. But against the run, man, he was stout and smart against the Vikings, and they'll need more of that moving forward.
His position coach, Kelvin Shepard, talked with us today, and just he really lit up talking about Jack Campbell today. Called him essentially the heartbeat of the defense in recent weeks. I don't know if that's post Hutchinson what he was talking about, but you know, just talking about how I thought it was interesting how he described him as like almost a motionless player. Because I feel like you need emotion to play this game, but apparently, you know, when you're a robot like Jack Campbell, you do not.
That's the same guy who, after his first sack, got up and ran straight up the tunnel into the locker room at Ford Field. I mean, yeah, everything about him is like hardwired.
He's most Iowa guy of all time, according to former podcast guest Berger Hesse,
friend of the program.
I've been unendingly amazed at Campbell's run stopping ability. Like, the way he flows to gaps, rarely overruns a play, rarely misses tackles. You know, he has that run through you attitude.
Yep.
Sometimes to the annoyance of his teammates on the practice field, because he practices like he plays, and a little surprised that he hasn't caused more friendly fire injuries than he has. But what else there to say? I mean, dude's a football player. I mean,
he's epitomizes a football player, and He also had a sack. I think third quarter, maybe no, it's fourth quarter against the Vikings, and it was a key sack because Darnold was escaping the pocket and he had a lane for probably a pretty easy first down. And Campbell again saw it developing, came downhill, made the play, and helped the Lions defense get off the field. And you feel his presence more and more. I mean, seven tackles, two pressures, four defensive stops, and a sack. That's the kind of production I think this team envisioned when they drafted him where they did. And with Hutchinson out, you need players to take steps to elevate maybe more quickly than you had even expected. And Jack Campbell's a guy that can do that.
Yeah, and I want to close kind of talking about you know, what it looked like post Hutchinson. The coverage against Minnesota was, in my opinion, unbelievable. In fact, mm-hmm. the play of the entire back seven was elevated. I thought that entire group stepped up in a massive way. In terms of the defensive front, I think it was about what you'd expect, right? You know, you got a little bit of juice from Aleem and Reader, and but less probably than you'd expect from Levi, but they had four sacks, and you look at that on the box score, and you're like, all right, that'll work. But and then you break them down, and Josh Pascal's was exactly what you need off the edge, right? It's just outside the red zone. He reads the play. He's there quick. He doesn't let the quarterback escape. Perfect. That's what you want from your edge. The other three were two of the cleanup variety from the linebackers, the one you mentioned from Campbell, another one from Malcolm, just as much as anything, the coverage deserves credit, right? Mm-hmm. And then your last one was just a super well schemed up overload blitz on a Hail Mary where Trevor Nowoski was there in the blink of an eye. I mean, it was a perfectly run play, but it was, not reflective, I think, of an overall pass rush just given the setting. And so 15 total pressures from the Lions. I know the stats been floated out there. Hutchinson had 15 on his own against Seattle his last full game. But not only that, there was 22 other pressures from Lions that day. They clearly need more juice. I don't think my opinion's going to change. I know Campbell wants us to take a look at Isaiah Thomas this week. And I think I've made my opinion clear that I'm excited to see what he brings to the table just based on what he offers on paper. They got a couple other guys on the practice squad. They're going to continue to play this out. I think you can against the Titans use it almost like not a preseason game, but an evaluation period for some guys. Not to repeat myself on how I described earlier, but Za'Darius Smith is out there raising his hand, mm-hmm. just screaming to be picked up by the Lions. And something in that category is, I think, what this team really needs here in the next, I don't know, how many days to the trade deadline? 2 weeks? Not even?
Yeah, 2 weeks yesterday.
2 weeks yesterday.
Yeah, they need someone that they can confidently put on the field for 25 to 30 pass rushing snaps and know that he's good for five pressures or six pressures and a sack every other game or so. Pascal and Ukwu, who got almost all of the work at defensive end as a duo against the Vikings, combined for 59 pass rushing snaps and two quarterback pressures, and both came from Pascal. And you're right, he did make a really nice play on his sack. I agree, he read that play well. He didn't bite too hard on the play action fake, and then he took down Darnold when he had his chance. But that isn't nearly enough production from your defensive ends for a team that rightfully considers itself a Super Bowl contender. And I'm not convinced that it's going to change all that much with Muhammad in there or with Houston in there or even with Isaiah Thomas in there. So I think they came out of that game, Campbell especially, really feeling the need to make a move in the next 2 weeks for someone with proven game in, game out ability in the NFL off the edge. And I do think we'll see something happen in the next week.
I feel like Max Crosby made every effort possible to shut down all the speculation. And I was reading the comments on it, and apparently you can't stop delusion. You can't, just just amazing. But I'd spent a little time this morning kind of just going through names to see what there was. And, you know, I keep stopping on Za'Darius Smith. It just fits all the right notes, the money, the age, the production that's still there. You know, you're not going to get a lot of exciting games. I did watch a little bit of Harold Landry today to see if my opinion would change. And I don't see it schematically. Maybe he can audition this week as well. Changed my opinion a little bit on Ojulari though. I mean, thought, you know, I thought he showed, despite his lower end weight at 240 pounds, like he can rush with some strength. He uses his arm length to his advantage. So, you know, maybe that's a name worth revisiting. There's still nobody on the Rams, Will. There's nothing there. There was one name that was floated in some speculation somewhere, maybe ESPN's giant trade piece today, and that's Khalil Mack. And look, Khalil Mack would be perfect. He can take the limo into the airport. He can be spotted ahead of time. But it's the same thing we talk about the Bengals, right? Like, look, the Chargers might be on the outside looking in right now. Their next three games, Saints, Browns, Titans. Like,
yeah,
they're not likely to sell. I'm not going to say they're not, but they're unlikely to sell. So just the names of teams that are selling is just, it's just limited. So I don't know. All these trades are happening so quickly right now. It's been kind of weird. But Dan was,
can they just have Brian Branch play defensive end? I mean, he can do everything. I mean, they might as well start blitzing him more. He did say, I hope they do blitz me more, and he can do everything. So they might as well just let him loose. I don't know, just line him up on the edge across from Pascal and go see what he can do one-on-one.
You know who would love for Brian Branch to blitz more? Amik Robertson, so he can get a damn pick.
Yeah.
These cornerbacks, Terrion Arnold, Davis has not said anything to that effect, but I think both Terrion Arnold and Amik Robertson are so hungry to be the first Lions cornerback to get a pick this year, which kind of a stat that's stunning, given how often they're turning it over. It's all the safeties are being greedy.
Yeah, I mean, eight picks for Kirby and Branch, and they're in a race against each other to, I don't know, 8, 9, 10, and hey, roommates last summer and now dynamic teammates on the field. That's as good as a safety tandem as there is right now in the NFL.
All right, let's pick this one. The line, did you look at it, Will?
11.5 was the last that I saw.
Is that the biggest Lions line you could remember?
Oh, by far. Well, they might have been on the other side against the Cardinals in 2021, that late season game when they actually ended up beating them. But I think that's the last like double digit spread that I can remember.
Oh, what was the game where they had, I think they might have taken it off the board where they, like, their entire coaching staff was out with COVID.
Oh, against Tampa Bay.
Yeah, against Tom Brady.
Yeah.
Could have been 80 and I still might have taken the Bucks.
Yeah. It was close.
11.5 though, Will, what are you doing with 11.5 points?
You know, I've been picking the Lions steadily for the past 5 weeks, and I'm going to pick them again here. I'll go back to what I said. They can neutralize the Titans' lone strength. And to me, that's their defensive front, their interior defensive front. I think that's why their defense is performing the way it has and ranks as a top five run defense. But the Lions have the answers, and if you can take away their best strength, I don't see how the Titans keep this game close, to be honest.
Will Levis, Mason Rudolph, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. I'm also taking the Lions. Will, how many points would I have to give you to take the Titans?
Oh, that's a great question. 16.5.
That's,
I would take it at 16. I want the hook though.
I might wager a burger on that this week. We'll see. Well, this podcast, as always, produced by Zach Clark, superstar stud, adjust our schedule at all times. Mm-hmm. Podcast can be found on the free Odyssey app. You can find it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stoney's 8-Track, all the places you get your podcast. You know, please make sure to download, like, subscribe, all the things you do with podcasts. I don't know, listen to it while you're mowing the lawn because it's still 70 degrees outside in Michigan somehow. I don't know. But for Will, I'm Justin. Thanks for listening.
Peace.
Did you know that VA New England Healthcare provides the very best medical care for our nation's heroes? Did you or a loved one serve this great country? You might be eligible for free healthcare. Find out right now by calling 844-VA-CARES. That's 844-VA-CARES. Or visit the VA website at vacares.us. Look, if you or a loved one served this country, get the healthcare you earned and deserve.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get 4 5G phones on us and 4 lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.